Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Dr. Mark Buchfuhrer from the Willis-Eckbaum Disease Foundation. So tell me a little bit about the Willis-Eckbaum Disease Foundation.
Okay, the foundation was started somewhere in the very early 90s, 1990 or 91. A group of, I would say, more or less older RLS patients at that time got together and started this, which was thought to be an orphan kind of disease organization. Across the country, and I guess using at that time high-tech fax machines, they communicated and started this initially called Restless Leg Foundation. And I guess one of the first things they did was start support groups around the country. And in fact, I think our support group was started, within a few years of kind of the founding of the Restless Leg Foundation. And now they have support groups all around the country where there's meetings and patients who have RLS can meet other people who have the disease, because most of the patients really feel that they're one of the few people who have this and not well publicized, not easily diagnosed. And through the efforts of the foundation, they have really dramatically increased the awareness of restless legs, and now we've had a name change in the last couple of years where we call it Willis-Eckbaum disease. Now it's much better known, and they probably had a large part in getting the pharmaceutical companies to take this a little more seriously, and now we have 4 FDA-approved drugs to treat restless legs.
So, how does the disease itself typically affect a person?
Okay, there's actually 4 to 5 diagnostic criteria which describe the symptoms more or less. The first thing is these people have these unusual sensations in their legs, but the most important part of it is they have this urge to move their leg. In a way, it's something similar to someone with neuropathy who may feel like numbness or tingling. And these patients may feel something similar to that or not. But the difference is that someone with neuropathy can lie still. And a restless leg patient, when they're sitting or relaxing, has to move. So it makes it very problematic during the daytime if they want to sit and watch TV, go to a movie, or sometimes even do work at their desk. They just can't sit still. But it becomes even more of a problem because this also tends to follow what we call the circadian body clock, or the 24-hour clock that we all have. And it usually starts in the late evening or bedtime. So they try to go to sleep. The symptoms start making them want to move their legs or get up and walk. And, of course, you can't sleep. And this may go on for hours. Walking makes the symptoms better, or movement. But when they go back to rest within a few minutes or less, the symptoms may come back. So what some patients do is they may walk around for a while, and if they get 5 or 10 minutes of respite from it and fall asleep, they're okay. Other patients may have to take hot baths or massage or do all kinds of things that may help relieve their legs for a little while. But it becomes a real sleep disorder when patients may take 1, 2, 3, 4 plus hours before it naturally lessens and they can finally go to sleep.
So, in your opinion, what's the most practical solution for dealing with this condition under the circumstances?
Again, it depends on the severity. If people have mild to early moderate restless legs, where it comes on at bedtime, maybe not every night, they can do things like, regular exercise will help prevent it sometimes. Or they can do some stretching exercises right before bed. That often is very helpful. Many patients, as I said before, take a hot or cold bath or shower or massage their legs. And these things by themselves may be very helpful without having to resort to any medication. And actually, there's a new FDA-approved device to treat restless legs. It's a vibration pad. It's called the Relaxis. It's R-E-L-A-X-I-S. Just got FDA approved, and actually it's not available yet, but will be available soon. And this pad is simply a vibration producing pad that they sleep on. And the vibrations are, you can kind of think of them like massaging the leg or providing a counter stimulation. So the pad will go on for 30 minutes and then go off by itself. And if you don't fall asleep by then, you can put it on for another 30 minutes. And a lot of patients may do well with these type of conservative treatments without having to resort to medication. However, when patients are in the moderate to severe category, most of them will need some type of medication, either to help them sleep, in which case just an ordinary sleeping pill may be helpful, but then you're not kind of addressing the problem. It would be like someone with back pain or headaches taking a sleeping pill just to treat the sleep-related part of their issues. But there's four, at least here in the United States, there's four approved drugs that can be very effective to treat restless legs. And, of course, patients with moderate to severe restless legs typically have daily symptoms, so they would be on these medications every day, usually for the rest of their life. But most of these medications work very well to relieve the symptoms, so patients don't really have to suffer if they get appropriate treatment.
So, in your time working with this condition, is there any one success that stands out for you?
As far as a patient or as far as a treatment?
The treatment.
Treatment. Well, I think all the treatments we have today, have their pluses and minuses. We have a little issue with some of the older treatments. The two first approved drugs, which are called Mirapex or generic pramipexol, and Requip or a generic Rouquinerol, they were approved about 10 years ago. And at first they seemed like these drugs really do well. They will treat over 90% of the patients very well initially. But unfortunately we found there's a significant problem with these two drugs that over time, and that could be sometimes several months, more often, a couple of years or even up to a decade or longer, they produce this condition called augmentation, where they actually make the disease worse, and then you require more and more drugs to relieve the symptoms, and it's not quite like you're addicted to a drug, but it's very difficult to get off it because you're now kind of dependent on it, and you need more and more of the medication. So those drugs, although they're still very popular and probably the most prescribed drugs, have to be watched more closely because a very significant percent of patients may go on to worsening of their restless legs. So they may not be the ideal drugs for everyone. And there's two newer drugs. One's a long-acting, we call it dopamine agonist, the first two drugs are what we call dopamine agonists. There's a long-acting one, which is a patch called Nupro, and I think it's also available in Canada. And then there's a different class of drug related to the anticonvulsant called Horizon, which turns into gabapentine and also helps restless leg patients sleep. So it has its own benefits, but they all have their pluses and minuses, so no one drug is perfect for every patient, and I've had lots of successes with all the drugs and, you know, and significant problems with a minority of patients on all the drugs also.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
That, folks, is one of the major pitfalls in disability life. Sometimes when we as a society hear about a condition such as RLS, we assume it's just an antsy feeling. It's really nothing. It's something to be disregarded. Not so. Anything that can have a profound, meaningful impact on a person and impairs quote-unquote normal functionality meets my personal definition of a disability. But the fact is, for those affected by this condition, they do need some support. And yes, even some direction sometimes as to what can be done to improve the quality of life that they have. Sometimes it's a matter of taking steps in a positive direction, striking on a balance that works for a person. It's not necessarily a matter of finding an immediate cure. It's a matter of recognizing what works for you and what doesn't. Having this understanding is the first step towards a better quality of life. That's something all of us strive for, really. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Don't feel alone. The Distress Center provides free, anonymous and confidential, caring and emotional support, referrals, crisis intervention, and suicide prevention by specially trained volunteers. They're open from noon to midnight. Sometimes talking does help. So call 519-256-5000.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Mark Bookfer, an expert on RLS. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from John Davidson, founder of Jesse's Journey. So tell me a little bit about Jesse's Journey.
Jesse's Journey started in 1995 when I pushed my son Jesse across Ontario in his wheelchair. Jesse had Duchenne muscular dystrophy, and it's a very, very tough disease, so we set about trying to find a way to deal with that through research. We were strong believers that research is where the answers lie, and so Jesse and I spent 124 days on the road together, starting at the Manitoba border, and then we finally concluded that journey when we reached Ottawa after 3,300 kilometers that took us around a large chunk of Ontario, moving down to Kenora and across the top of the Lake Superior, down through Cottage Country and along the eastern shore of Lake Huron and down to Sarnia and Windsor. And from Windsor, we made the turn and headed on toward London, Toronto, Kingston, and finally finished in Ottawa, and that was the beginning. We gave $1.5 million to research as a result of that project, and then 3 years later, I decided to walk across Canada, and that was a 10-month project at 33 kilometers a day for 286 days, and that was what launched our endowment, which has now grown to over $11 million, and from that, we're able to fund fair amount of research, and we're pretty much on target for our goal of hoping to be able to one day leave $1 million a year for research, and we're up to where we're leaving about a little more than $900,000 a year now, and that's pretty good for a little shop our size when there's only four people there, and you know, we're probably Canada's smallest and hardest working charity, at least I think so.
So How does the community respond to the work of the organization?
The community has been great, not just in London, but across Canada and from other parts of the world. In all honesty, when I was first signing receipts, and I still try and sign as many as I can, thanking those people who send a donation, those receipts used to say, you know, London, 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 St. Thomas, London, 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 Windsor, London, London, London. It was like that in the early days. Now I look at them and they go, you know, Moncton, Lethbridge, Dawson City, St. John, Atlanta. They just, donations come from everywhere. And I have no idea how those people found out about us. I suppose on the internet, we're pretty easy to find there under Jesse's Journey. Just jessesjourney.com. And it's very gratifying to know that people will reach out and help. We don't have any huge corporate sponsors. These are all people who have demonstrated what real philanthropy is all about. They reach in their own pocket and they make a donation to something that they believe is going to find an answer, the same way that I believe it's going to find an answer, and I work at that each and every day.
So, in your time with the organization, what sorts of challenges have there been?
Oh boy, that's a long list. Yeah, I hardly know where to start there. The I suppose the biggest one was getting started, and people kind of wondered what were we doing when we thought we would focus strictly on research, and we did very well at that. But I mean, boy, oh boy, you were working from home, and then finally we got a small office, and that grew a little bit. But we're still a pretty humble operation, and none of the furniture matches, and the day it does, I probably won't be there. So you do everything from sweeping the floor to delivering the mail to visiting with donors and writing letters and writing thank yous and signing receipts and holding meetings and organizing special events and looking after golf tournaments and walks and helping other families who want to do an event, be it a golf tournament or a car rally or whatever it might be. So you really get yourself immersed in this, and you become a jack of all trades trying to do everything you can to help those families who want to help us. And I've described this at times as we're a little bit like AA for Duchenne families. We do not go out and solicit those families to become part of who we are. If they want to reach out to us, we're there. We're there to help them in every way we can. And boy, oh boy, it has had a long, long list of challenges, but we've been at this for a number of years, and some of those challenges are now a little smoother. They're not the bump in the road that they were at the beginning, but we've figured out how to do some of these things, and you don't want to say you've ever got it down pat, because the day you say that, you're going to be in trouble. You always want to make sure you go at these things the right way, and I couldn't be more proud of how the volunteers have responded in helping us with these things, and there are just a myriad of events that go on from the Warrior Challenge, where, you know, these are young people primarily who they're crawling under things and over rope ladders and getting covered in mud, and they just love it. They come as a team and they have great time, to where we have things like the Plunkett Car Show here in London. Steve Plunkett has very generously provided his estate, and this year we had something that would appeal to a lot of people in Windsor, I think, in that it was the 50th anniversary of the Mustang, so he focused on the Ford Mustang this year, and it was the best show we've ever had. I think we had something in the neighborhood of 20,000 people were there over the 2 days, and he gets like 3,500 cars that are on display. So, you know, when people do things like that, it's a very, very good feeling that it gives you to know that people do want to reach out and help. But boy, yeah, it's been a long road, Cam, and there's been a lot of challenges.
So, when you mentioned the success moments, which would you say has been the greatest for Jesse's Journey?
I'm sorry, when you mentioned the what moment?
Success.
Success?
Success, yes.
I think it was probably seeing our ability to fund research grow over the years with that dollar amount that has grown and grown and grown consistently. Oftentimes when people undertake walks of some kind, they you're in the news for the time that you're out there, and then there's kind of a fadeaway factor, I think. We've gone the reverse. We did these special events to begin, and then we have built on that and grown from there, and that has really been probably the key to our success, is to never give up and never rely on things that worked yesterday, because there's no guarantee they're going to work today or tomorrow. Always be aware of where there are new opportunities, and make sure you capitalize on those, because, you know, when I look at that endowment, yes, it's a lot of money, but you know what? I never view that as our money. That money belongs to the people of Canada and from other places on the globe who have given it to us, and we are really the stewards of that money. It's our job and our responsibility to make sure that we see that that money is working as hard as the people who gave it to us had to work to get it in the first place. So to see the growth of the organization, the growth of the endowment, the growth in the amount of hope that's out there, the growth in the number of research projects that are beginning to show more and more promise on a daily basis, that's very satisfying, and that's where I think the success lies.
So what are the next immediate steps for Jesse's journey?
I think the next steps are to probably develop our ability to go to the next level. And I'm not exactly sure what that next level is going to be, but we have been very, very much special event oriented for a number of years. And special events are hard work. They're often contingent on weather, and you need a huge supply of volunteers, which we've been fortunate to have. We've done very, very well with special events, and we'll never abandon them completely. But we will now look for what is the next opportunity to reach out to Canadians and have them, and people from other countries as well, and have them want to respond to be part of what's going on, because people like things that are successful. When they sense that something is moving in the direction they want to see it move, then they want to be part of it. They want to make sure that they can look in the mirror and say, you see that endowment that reached that goal? I helped build that. I helped move them closer and closer to the answer that they've been looking for. So we'll be looking for those kinds of opportunities, and I wish I could tell you exactly what they are, but I don't know myself exactly where they lie. But every now and then it's a good thing to do some of that kind of blue sky stuff where you get people away from the phones and away from meetings, and you really ask yourselves those questions about who are we, what do we do, how are we doing it, how can we do it better, and why do we do those things? And that's a very quick answer. When I look at a picture of Jesse or any of those boys, those families that we know, when I see those faces, I know exactly why we're doing what we're doing. And as I say, now that we're a little further down the track in our maturity, we just want to make sure that we move to the next step cautiously, but at the same time, we want to move there as quickly as possible and make sure that we make a difference in the lives of all those kids who are just like Jesse.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, thanks very much, Cam. I appreciate your interest.
Of course. Jesse's journey began simply as the love of family shown to a young person with a disability. But it's grown into something, so much potential, so much hope. What a gift to those who are benefiting from it. It's always easier for us to understand when we've been around disability life for a long time. Someone we care about, someone we know. Truth is, it's easier to grow up without the prejudices and the myths surrounding disability life if young kids are around it from an early age. They come to understand it is not that these people have less potential than anyone else in society. It's simply, they use a different means of getting there sometimes. It's a matter of finding what works for you in disability life. finding what you can do to make life that much better. Truth is, when it's family, when someone you care about, it puts a very real perspective on what a disability means. When I was young, just learning to walk again, my family, they didn't have a lot of experience with what it meant to be around someone with a disability. But they learned, and they did so by drawing on their own experience. I sang, "This is what we know. This is what has worked in the past. How can we modify that in a way that would work for someone with a disability? How can we make things adaptable?" And that is the underlying question in all of disability life. We have A. How can we modify it to be B? It's always the thing we must keep on our minds for those with disabilities. To recognize they have hopes, potentials, dreams, and capabilities all their own. And if given the right tools, the right opportunities, they can and will achieve. The same is true of anyone in society. If they're allowed to play to their strengths, to express things they're good at, and yes, even the things they care about, then odds are they'll be far more likely to succeed. It starts with motivation, with the belief that it can be done. I believe that's where Jesse's journey started. For John, just began as saying, "I believe I can do this. I believe I can make an impression." You know, folks, he was absolutely right. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HandyLink, number 4, @gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. Sometimes disability life reminds me of this old quote, "Family is a tyranny ruled over by its weakest member." And why I bring that up is, sometimes a person with a disability within a family is perceived as being someone who needs to be cared for. But really, they can inspire and spark real change, as did Jesse's journey. Fact is, every person with a disability has great strength, and it can bring out strength in those around them as well. When someone takes a chance, takes a stand and says, "I know I can make this better. I know I can go the distance. I can take the step forward to make things better for this person," they come to find out about their own strength and the strength of character of those around them, those who support these organizations, those who care, those who say, "I'm not going to get out there and make a big grand gesture, but I am going to help in the way that I can." That is how disability life betters us all. Because we come to realize more about disability life and ourselves, what our thoughts truly are on the subject, what really matters to us, how we feel about diversity and equality, and whether we're going to be that someone who stands beside a person with a disability and says, "Yes, you can achieve greater things." This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. You've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.